Welcome to the Virtual Excellence Show, where we talk to amazing people about how to be excellent in all things virtual. And today, a very special treat. Futurist and keynote speaker Gerd Leonard will be sharing his insights on being a virtual keynote speaker and into the future of work and organizations as a renowned futurist. So Gerd is globally recognized. He's spoken all over the world in over 50 countries, well ahead of me. He's also CEO of the Futures Agency, is author of many books, including the best-selling Technology versus Humanity, and is also a video producer and reinventing himself in a very different world. So let's get Gerd Leonard on. Welcome, Gerd.
Hey, nice to be here with you.
Fantastic. So until a little earlier this year, you used to spend a very lot of time in airplanes and airport lounges and speaking to people around the world. So what's it been like for you shifting during this year?
Yeah, it has been a very strange thing. I think this is happening to so many people. It's like what used to be the normal is gone, and the new normal is uncertain. The only thing that is normal is that it's uncertain. Of course, we're pivoting now to virtual speaking, which is really interesting. It's more like television. But the worst thing I think about the situation as a speaker is that you're not actually in the room with actual people, and that makes a vast difference in terms of how things flow and what is being done. And so it's a huge change, and I think it's going to work out in the long run, but I think we're doing this at least for another year and a half or so until travel becomes kind of feasible again. You know?
So what sorts of, what are you finding that clients are looking for in terms of virtual keynotes? Is it, I presume, yeah, it's not really changing from just take old keynote and stick it into virtual. I mean, it becomes quite a different thing in terms of what events are and how they're being done.
Yeah, I think, you know, the real challenge is that you cannot do virtually what you would do on a stage, because on a stage it's more like a concert, or like you're relating to people and you're communicating with them from afar, and you can feel the vibration, so to speak. And you can't do that online. So online people are, you know, disoriented and distracted, and they, you know, they are quick to leave and quick to change. And so you have to change your entire thing. It's not just the design, like I'm using the virtual backgrounds. I don't use slides, you know. That's hard to do, of course, on a real stage. But you also have to change the topics and the speed. So it has to be fast and irreverent and quick to the point, not much sort of talking heads. You know, it's like a whole different world. The good thing about online is you can do interaction, you can do polls, you can do tweets, you can connect, you can bring in other content. So it does have advantages, but clients are looking for something that's really immersive, powerful, quick and energetic. And I think they're looking for something that actually takes advantage of the online medium, which is interaction. You know, when you're speaking in a crowd with 1,000 people, you cannot interact with any of them just like this, you know, or maybe through a tool like Mentimeter or Slido. But online, you can do it, yeah, instantly, and that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, so which goes to the topic of the future of events, and which is a very interesting one for the massive events industry, we've got physical events might come back, virtual events will continue, all this I talk about hybrid events, which are both physical and virtual. I mean, what are your thoughts around what is going to happen with the events industry?
Well, I think it's quite clear that, you know, everybody who's human, and that's most of us, you know, wants to connect with other humans. And we don't connect very well through only screens or data feeds or whatever you want to call it, or virtual illustrations and so on. I mean, we connect through unspoken interaction and, you know, emotional intelligence. And, you know, this is completely different. So this is going to come back and it will continue. However, you know, behaviors are changing. And people are realizing that this can work, right? It's different. It's kind of like, I would say, it's a little bit like online dating versus real dating. You know, you can date online, but in the end, you're still going to meet in real life, right? You can date in real life and meet in real life, but this is just a variation. So to me, it's like, I think it's going to stay, and the virtual way of interacting will explode. And next is augmented reality, virtuality, holograms, television style, cross-media things that we are doing. It's going to be very powerful. But going back to actual meetings, I think that will happen. It will take more time. It will be more selective. You'll have to have more reasons. And don't forget, of course, climate change issues. Right? People are clearly going to pay a carbon tax for flying. And that's going to make it even more prohibitive. So I think we're going to have a hybrid world like this, and also depends very much on what you actually want to do. You know, if you want to do a quick sort of brainstorming session, it's okay. But if it's about really reinventing something powerful, it's going to require face-to-face, I think, still. And that's just the way that humans are.
Well, there's been a big advantage to me of sitting in Australia, a long way from the rest of the world, to do virtual keynotes rather than having to spend a very long time on an airplane. I mean, you speak everywhere, of course, but it's a little easier in more densely populated Europe. So do you think speaking just becomes more local?
Well, I mean, it's like tourism. You know, tourism has gone local as a result of those restrictions, and speaking is doing the same. However, speaking is different in the sense that you know, it's a question of availability. If you want a speaker from Australia to come into London, you know, it used to be quite an effort, and now it's just a phone call away, right? So we're also looking at global competition. We're looking at VIPs and writers and rock stars and, you know, moving into online things. Bill Gates is doing some webcasts every 2 days, right? So it's a whole different ballgame. I really believe, you know, that the human brain is wired for relationships, experiences, and sort of the things that's not just data or information, and therefore it's going to be important to connect to that one way or the other and to be real. Like, you know, the biggest thing that is happening is that there's a disconnect. You know, I'm not looking at the camera, I'm looking over here, you know, and nobody knows I'm actually still there. So it takes a lot of practice. When you're on television, you're sitting at a podium or something, and the camera people do this, but when you speak virtually, you have to try to go through this thing and make a connection to people that you assume are still there. Right? So that's,
yes,
I think that's quite a bit of practice. I'm sure you've been through the same experience. And
yeah, absolutely.
I really believe, as a keynote speaker, I think most keynote speaker will have a hard time adapting to this because it is not at all like going on a stage and, you know, playing the guitar, so to speak.
as you've done.
As I used to.
As, you know, the show is Virtual Excellence, so it's around being excellent at the virtual. So what would you suggest to somebody who is trying to be on that journey to say, all right, well, I do need to connect through the camera to whoever's on the other side if they're actually sitting there or paying attention? So how do you learn to do that? Does it just practice?
I think with all these things, like even going on the real stage, there is a certain amount of talent or natural ability to connect. That is part of it, I believe. But most of it can be learned, I think. You know, it's just a brutal change of learning and a steep learning curve. So first, I think, you know, all of the content that you're presenting must be relevant to, as a futurist, to now, the immediate future, right? Like the number one question is, how will this crisis impact our future, right? And that question didn't exist until half a year ago. I mean, it was about the future, but it wasn't about one thing like COVID or the corona crisis, you know, impacting our entire future. And now everything is connected to this. So you have to upgrade your topics. Like I've been changing all my topics to be more relevant in the connection with the current crisis. Second is the technical part. You're going to have to become a real tech chief. You know, it's like, I can't tell you, it's probably taken me 200 hours to set up this setup that I have here with, you know, three cameras and background lights and virtual background and four computers and, you know, and my Aiton Mini Pro and all that stuff. So
you love doing it, don't you, Gerd?
Yeah, I love fidgeting arena. I'm a former musician, you know. I always fidget around with knobs and cables, you know. But I found many people don't like this. You know, they don't like to. But I think, you know, if you want to go far in the speaking business in the future, you're going to have to be really good virtually first and foremost. Great topics, great pace, great presentation, great personality, great character. And then you really have to know your tech. And it's not hard. I think most people could easily do it. It just, yeah. And then you do 100 shows. You know, that's basically what it takes. And so
10,000 hours are equivalent.
Yeah, practice, practice, practice. And after you do 100 shows, you say, you know, this isn't working. I need to use this. And you know, because it's different for everyone. For example, I don't like to multitask very much when I'm speaking. So I'm using this app called Mm-hmm, which is an American company with a bold name, MMHMM, right? Yep, you're also using it, where you can control your interaction on the screen with a PS4, PlayStation controller, right? I found that to be interesting for gaming, but when I'm speaking, do I want to fidget with that? I'm not so sure, yeah? So it's a question of personality.
Yeah, well, being the speaker, becoming the game player. And so at the very beginning of all this, I said strategy is two things, survival and reinvention. And I think, you know, you've obviously far more than survived, but you're reinventing yourself. Part of it is shifting from keynote speaker to virtual speaker, but you're also, you know, saying video or TV or so on is the future. So can you tell us about your plans in that place?
Well, I think what's happening is that if you already have a strong presence on the internet, like I've been working on, I don't know, for last 500 years. No, just kidding. I've got like, I don't know, 1,000 videos on YouTube, right? 32,000 subscribers. That's not a whole lot, but it's a lot for a speaker, I think, in average. And really what's happening is that what is the difference between you watching me on YouTube and all the stuff I have there for free and you watching me online at a live event, right? There has to be a difference. So I have to figure out that difference, and this is what I'm working on. That's interactivity, more timeliness, you know, new ideas, and it really raises the bar to be better and more timely and more, you know, looking for new things and doing new things in terms of technology. So I think what's happening is that Zoom is the next YouTube, right? So and doing sort of online TV stuff is becoming a normal thing for speakers. That's kind of like Charlie Rose, you know, the now unfortunate disgraced Charlie Rose from PBS, but who's been doing this for 40 years, you know, really powerful interviews, very old-fashioned style. But now the style is cross-media. Right? It's tapping into anything that's happening on the web, real-time feeds, real-time data, background, you know, like I use this thing like Apple TV in the background, right? And I can bring in a couple of scenes from different you know, that's part of it. And so I think I'm moving towards a direction of becoming more of a presenter, host, you know, basically a sort of a media experience rather than necessarily just keynote speaking. Part of that is also interviews and interventions. I'm doing a lot of board meetings now, right? Virtual board meetings.
Right.
Because people want to tap into the future stuff, but they know they can't bring it to London very easily right now.
Yeah, that goes a little bit to the very old distinction between synchronous and asynchronous. So synchronous is where you're presenting and people are sitting there and they're watching while you're doing it, or you know, whereas the create stuff and share it.
Yeah, I mean the personal thing, the personal appearance, the personal connection, it becomes the premium, you know. Well, that's always been the premium, but it's even more true now. Like, you know, I've been booked just yesterday for two events here in Switzerland, and they are daring to go ahead, which is good, right? But at the same time, that's the premium, right? And that's going to be more expensive, and it's going to be more risky, right, for people to do. So we're moving into this new world, and I guarantee you, like, in 3 or 4 years, I'll be popping up in holograms in Beijing, doing my speeches in entirely new ways. And that's not so far-fetched. That already works. It's just too expensive.
Yeah. Right. I was about to ask you, are you active? I mean, I've been interested in looking at it for the last 10 years, but exactly the same as you. Whenever I get a quote, I think, okay, I don't think that quite works.
Yes. Well, I think on the economic side, it's still the same story, right? You're getting booked because of the perception of who you are and what you do, and of course, the reality of what you deliver, right? And because you're lively and interesting, you have a personality, and this is even, I mean, the bar is going up and up and up because online is such an obvious place, you know. They look at you for 40 seconds and say, oh, you know, Gerd is tired, click, gone, right? So it's like, you know, and that is becoming, you know, you really have to upgrade your act in every possible way And I think that's going to be quite a challenge for a lot of people who are traditional speakers, who may have deep content and deep thinking, but it's hard to convey it, you know, through this apparatus in front of you, you know, when you don't know how to use the tech.
Yeah. So this takes us to, you know, you're the futurist, so we can ask you about the future, or we can have a good conversation about it. So the world has changed, and one of the things that's changed the most is work and organizations. And so I'm very interested in the virtual organizations that have been virtual from the start. And obviously, they don't really change much. A lot of organizations have been not at all virtual, and now suddenly they've been cast into new worlds. So what do you see in the future of, well, I suppose the near to medium, the medium term future of work in terms of the shift to virtual? Is this going to be where organizations suddenly realize this is what we have to do now, and so they learn to do it well, or do we start to see a big gap between those that can do it and those that can't?
I mean, in many cases, again, it's a little bit like dating. You know, sometimes you say, well, online dating works great for me, and it has been proven, by the way, that people who have met online stay together longer than others. You know? So online dating does work, you know, but does it work for me? And does it work here? And does it work under these circumstances? It's not a black or white scenario. And so with work, I think it's the same thing. You know, some people work well in remote environments, other ones don't, because they can't make that real connection, they're feeding off the others. So I think the future is going to be hybrid, depending on different scenarios. I see a future in 10 years where we're going to have 50, 60, 70% of people are going to be freelancers, right? And they're going to be in the gig economy working in the cloud. But we're still going to meet with them physically when we can and if we can, and we're going to get much better at using these tools. The tools are pretty lame today because they really haven't been worked on for a long time, but now they're getting a warp drive, a jetpack, you know. I mean, look, just the latest Zoom update has all these funny icons and stuff, you know, that you can use. So it's going to move very quickly. And I really believe that the future of work is a hybrid scenario. It depends on where you are, what you're trying to achieve. And you see many companies who used to say that everybody can work online, like I think IBM is one of them, right? They said, oh, you guys should come back to the office, you know, because there is a process, you know. So I don't believe that we're going to close all the offices and work remotely. I think we may not need an office depending on what the work is. But, you know, if you're a game company inventing games, it's the process of hanging out in the coding room or in the screening room and eating pizza, you know, that gets stuff done. So this is basically, I think I'm not that hooked on saying that it's all going to virtualize. I don't believe that people are capable of virtualizing in the same way that we can virtualize, you know, e-commerce or something. This is completely different.
So actually, just I'm interested in your thoughts about cities. So one of the biggest trends for, you know, the mega trends for decades has been urbanization, bigger cities, more concentration. And now, maybe that will continue, but I mean, that is being put more in question by the ability to work remotely. I mean, do you see that mega trend of urbanization in developed or developing countries shifting because of this? Or is it going to, we still need to be living in these cities?
Well, I think that's it's a little bit both, but generally speaking, again, people live in large cities and in large places because of the connectivity to each other and the inspiration, if you want, and the ability to quickly connect the network. I mean, this is why you live in San Francisco, not in Anchorage, Alaska, right? Even though that's a nice place also. But, you know, this is part of what happens in those places. Like in Sydney, things happen in different ways, and this is why you live there. So I think this is going to continue. At the same time, we're going to build virtual cities, and we're going to build places in the countryside that are like sort of virtual cities and where we meet. So that's also sort of this combination of the two. I think the good part will be that this enormous increases in rent and expenses in cities will decline because there will be a little bit less demand for a while until we figure out what urbanization actually means. Yeah? But there are dozens of other reasons why people move to urban centers. Even if offices are declining, I see a sort of rehumanization of cities. And I think that's going to be good. You know, more space for people, more social space. I mean, this is what we are. We are social animals, and that's what we do there. You know? So, yes, you can probably have an internet community in the outback in Australia somewhere where you pay little
lucky,
or no.
But anyway.
Well, if you get internet connection, right? But with little or no rent at all. But, you know, will you have the juice? You know, will you have the experience? And so I think cities will continue. Albeit, I think the enormous amount of money being spent in offices, that will decline and normalize to some degree. So that is not a major disaster, but it is a change of economic context, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that if you look at, there is this desire to be together. I think, you know, talented people want to be next, you know, talented people who have the same, you know, skills. They can learn from them. They can exchange from them. These are people they know, understand what they are doing. And I think you need the word inspiration. And so that's a critical part, to find other people around you who are inspiring. And in a talent economy, I think, you know, almost all of them will choose to be close enough, at least, to people that they can work with.
Think about inspiration. I mean, we can find inspiration online. Yeah, of course we can, right? This is why we have TED and YouTube and of course, movies and so on. But that inspiration is a completely different league of inspiration as compared to sitting next to a brilliant person. You know, just give yourself 10 minutes with Bill Gates. I think you'll find that inspiration is quite different than watching Bill Gates on the Economist channel or something. You know, it's just different. And this is what humans are. And I think we have to respect that, but also, of course, try to make use of the tools that are available to us and improve the tools. You know, I think they could be so vastly improved and be more intuitive. That's why I like apps like you know, which have been doing that. And I think we're going to see dozens, we're going to see hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars go into development of virtual collaboration spaces.
So which goes to the, you know, the title of your actually, not very recent anymore, but still a very successful book, Technology versus Humanity, and where technology is shaping us in various ways, not all of them positive, in fact, many of them negative, and where, as you say, that, you know, the future is human. So overlaid with this virtualization, where we're using technology by necessity to be able to connect, I mean, how do we bring back that humanity? How do we focus on that humanity, I suppose, and making it a very human future?
Well, I think the future is humanity on top of technology. You know, let's make no mistake about this. Without technology, we wouldn't be getting anywhere. We wouldn't be doing this, and we certainly wouldn't be solving energy or climate change or hunger or disease, or, you know, it's science and technology. But on top of that, to keep what makes us human means that we have to protect what makes us human. Right? The more we connect, the more we must protect. Because there are things that are not about science and technology. In fact, humans don't make decisions based on data. Right? Well, you could argue that is data, but it's certainly a lot more complicated than an algorithm. And so we need to bring back the emphasis on human ability and what I call the andro-rhythms in my book, you know, the human things, not the algorithms. And they belong together. So, you know, how do we do that? Well, we have to teach our kids to become better humans, first and foremost, right? Creativity, design, imagination, intuition, emotion, emotional intelligence, the list goes on, you know, back to the humanities. We need to teach our kids to be better and more accomplished humans so that they can control technology, right? And then the second thing is, of course, we need our governments, our politicians around the world is to give us back control of technology, of our data. Social media is a disaster, has to be fixed. You know, so basically, there's going to be a lot of governance around this issue of saying, well, too much of a good thing is a very bad thing. You know? And that applies so much to technology. Like, imagine you use virtual reality tools, right? You could have too much of that and you would basically go nuts. Or you could do what Elon Musk is suggesting, which is to connect your brain to the internet using his Neuralink, and then you would truly go nuts. So this is one of those things where this is one of those things where I would say, well, too much of a good thing is definitely a very bad thing. It's like smoking, drinking, and taking drugs all at the same time. So all in moderation. And I think this is part of the process that we're going through now. In 10 years, technology will be virtually unlimited in power. And what are we going to do to limit it? Well, that can't be done by the tech companies. It has to be done by the public and by government. It's the job of government to moderate this.
Yeah, well, and the government is, hopefully, if it's a relatively democratic, formed by the people. And so we have to have our voices so that the governments, the powers that be, hear them in order to be able to make those, bring those to reality.
Yeah, I've said many times, I think that every politician, every public official needs to have what I call a driver's license for the future. It's these days, I work a lot with politicians and governments. I have to say, it's like, do they know the future? Do they know the most simple things about the next 10 years? And the question is often, they are reacting to the future. And you can't do that anymore. I mean, we're talking about like automation. Automation is going to be a bigger force in the work market than globalization. And what are you going to do about it? And you have to have answers. And AI and super intelligence and, all of these things are very good and very powerful, but we do have to control them and we have to regulate them, Otherwise, we end up where we are now. Facebook is the biggest medium in the world and Mark Zuckerberg is the president of the world, the most unelected person you can imagine.
So to round out, this is the Virtual Excellence Show and...